Manic Street Preachers, La Tristessa, preceded by Joe Walsh and Life's Been Good at 8:15, the full English breakfast show. Sri Lanka are 70 for 6 in their second innings, leading England by 107 runs. They've just resumed after lunch there. That's Burns Nights tonight, and whether you're a fan of Scotland's national dish or find it hard to swallow, the story of haggis is shrouded in controversy. You don't like it, do you?
No, I don't.
No. Popularised in the late 18th century, thanks to Robert Burns' Address to a Haggis, this food is still enjoyed by Scots and expats the world over, especially on the Pope's birthday, the 25th of January, when Burns Night is celebrated. Scotland's national dish has a long and complicated history, with the great chieftain of the pudding race even banned in parts of the world. Despite haggis being a hallmark of Scottish identity, some experts believe it's actually not Scottish at all. Food historian Catherine Brown claims the recipe for haggis can be traced back to the 17th century in England, although the origins of the dish can be found even further back in history. It may not have had the name haggis, but there is evidence the ancient Romans created similar haggis-type dishes with offal stuffed inside an animal's stomach lining. There's even a reference to a primitive cousin of the haggis in the Greek epic Homer's Odyssey. A man before a great blazing fire turning swiftly this way, that, and a stomach full of fat and blood, very eager to have it roasted quickly. Also, there's a reference by the playwright Aristophanes in 423 BC. There are various references to haggis-like dishes in both English and Scottish poetry and literature from the 1400s onwards, but it's not until 615 that a recognisable recipe appears. As Brown discovered through her research, the author Gervase Markham recorded a recipe for haggis in The English Housewife over 150 years before Robert Burns wrote his Odes to the Delicacy. With no clear origins and variations of the dish appearing throughout the world, there's not much historical evidence to suggest that haggis is actually a Scottish dish, and you don't even have to eat it the traditional way. You can enjoy haggis lasagna, haggis pizza, haggis pakora, and even haggis crisps and ice cream. No?
No.
Can't tempt you?
No. It's Mother's birthday today as well. Happy birthday, Mummy.
Have some haggis.
She'll have it with some trifle.
Haggis is made from sheep's pluck, aka hearts, liver and lungs, along with oats, onions and spices, all stuffed inside a sheep's stomach lining and then boiled. Ugh. Delicious. In 1971, it became illegal to import haggis to the United States from Scotland due to a ban on food containing sheep lungs, which makes up around 10 to 15% of the traditional recipe.
Yeah, well, Burns Night always got overshadowed by my mother's birthday, as I said. I think it was a bit of trifle. But no haggis.
Well, I hope
They quite liked it, I think.
I hope our Scottish friends have managed to get some haggis, what with
this,
the new EU regulations. It's Monday morning pop quiz.
1964.
Ooh.
When the UK government announced plans to build three new towns in southeast England to act as overspill for overpopulated London.
Milton Keynes.
One of these is centred exactly on the village of Milton Keynes.
Corby.
Yes, well done. And also the same year, the post office tower in London is completed, although it does not begin operation until October of the following year. It was the year when Match of the Day was first aired on BBC Two. ITV soap opera Crossroads was aired for the first time. And actor Peter Sellers married actress Britt Ekland.
And Rob Harrison was born in Epsom Hospital.
There you go. And on January the 1st, Top of the Pops was first aired on BBC Television. The very first Top of the Pops broadcast on Wednesday evening at 6:36 p.m. The opening band was...
The Beatles?
No.
Is this one of the questions?
Yes.
The Kinks?
No.
Rolling Stones?
Yes. They had a number 13 hit with I Wanna Be Your Man, and that was the song they performed. No, not
See
really.
See me afterwards. Oh.
I'm not going to count that one. That was on your third chance. Question number two.
Yeah. I know I was just about alive, but I mean, I can't remember that.
Peter and Gordon released their first single.
Oh.
It was a Paul McCartney song that McCartney had decided was not good enough for the Beatles. And the song ultimately tops the charts in both the UK and the US.
Can't remember the name of it.
A World Without...
Love.
Yes.
Yes, I knew there was love in it somewhere.
And finally, for Mother on her birthday, for the second successive year, the Beatles had the biggest selling single with...
Twist and Shout.
No.
Help.
No. Can't Buy Me Love.
Does she like this, does she?
Yes.
Yeah.
She always likes a bit of Beatles.
Does she?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I can't find it now.
Oh, well, there you go.
She'll be dancing around the kitchen to this thing, will she?
Actually, I don't know. Dad will be bringing her a cup of tea in bed, as per usual.
That's really nice. Does she ever bring him a cup of tea?
Never.
That's not fair.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
Oh, the weather outside is frightening.
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful here. I mean, it was wonderful. Not a footprint to be seen, to be honest with you. It was so deep and crisp and even. It was wonderful. It was like a kingdom of isolation. It was absolutely lovely, the snow, this weekend.
It's very well summed up for the United Kingdom's position at the moment, a kingdom of isolation.
Well, the cold never bothered us anyway, so we're okay.
And did you get out there and build a snowman?
Well, we did build a snowman. It turned into a snow bunny. I don't know if it's because the snowman looked a bit funny or Amelia wanted something slightly different, but it was good. And you know, normally in England, the snow is that sleety, yucky, horrible kind of stuff that never sticks together. This is cotton wool snow, blended beautifully, rolled lovely. It was absolutely delightful.
OK, I saw them clearing the snow off the pitch at Stamford Bridge before the FA Cup game yesterday.
Yeah, they were. They did a good job, didn't they? And Chelsea managed to beat the mighty Luton yesterday. You must be very pleased.
Yeah, it's your favourite song, isn't it? Luton Airport.
Ooh, wee, ooh.
Pick your pardon.
Isn't that how it goes? Ooh, wee, ooh, Luton Airport. I don't know.
Said the boy from Milton Keynes.
This is true.
Yeah. Okay, markets. Sort of flirting with record highs, but Wall Street pulled back a bit on Friday. Signs that the job market's going in the wrong direction. Of course, rising cases of coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly. There is pressure not only on the economy, but also, of course, what's happening with the pandemic and the speed of the vaccine rollout, no doubt, is high in terms of investors' minds. But should remember, over the course of the week, US markets notched up impressive gains, investors warming to the prospect of an aggressive spending Biden administration. Also pleased around the idea that Janet Yellen will become Treasury Secretary. Fourth quarter earnings season getting underway as well. So Wall Street actually powered ahead last week. S&P 500's up 2.1%. It's biggest weekly advance since the end of November. In Europe, not such a bright picture. Record daily deaths registered in Germany and the UK. Warnings of lockdown extensions, along with that PMI data that showed services remained in contraction. Holding back equity markets in Europe, Stock 600 was up, but it was only up 0.2%. We are, however, looking at a stronger start on the European bourses this morning. Currently calling the FTSE up 13 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 33 points. CAC calling in Paris up 6 points.
I think we might be joining in lockdown sometime later this week.
Curfew, lockdown, it's all coming your way.
Yeah. Yes, you mentioned earnings season. Normally you'd be scurrying around a Canary Wharf, sort of bumming coffee off people, looking at the results.
Let's go on to the earnings scorecard, shall we? According to data from Refinitiv, 66 S&P 500 companies have reported. 88% have beaten analyst estimates for earnings, 78% have beaten on the revenue side, well above the long-term average. Of course, US banks have led the early reporting. Their numbers showed robust fourth quarter figures, helped by a surge in revenue at trading divisions, particularly equities, of course, driven by that wild volatility created by the pandemic, the unprecedented central bank action. Investment banking revenues have also jumped as banks were called to help companies raise debt and equity, as well as advise on merger and acquisition deals. Other features of the bank's reporting season include increasingly releasing reserves set aside for credit losses. Loan delinquencies, you could argue, have remain significantly below the dire forecast at the start of the pandemic. There are signs that household spending has picked up over the course of the past quarter. Loan growth, you have to say, has been lackluster and expected to remain so over the course of the coming months. The question is, of course, how long will it last? Trading desks have benefited from this perfect storm that's unlikely to be repeated. Reality is, I guess, future fortunes will be determined by the speed of the recovery and the path of normalisation for the banks.
Any sledging going on in your part of the world? Or?
No, there wasn't that much of that around. I mean, we're not supposed to be out and about and playing on hills and getting out.
You can go for your daily exercise.
That's true. I don't know if getting a sledge out contributes to that concept. So,
well, Box Hill's not far away, is it?
It's not far away, actually. Yeah, you know, well, nip into Denbigh's for a glass of wine.
And Colley Hill as well, that's not far away either.
I don't know that one, but I didn't see too many people out and about. People in their gardens, perhaps a little bit, but nothing beyond that.
Well, you have to be careful at your age, don't you? You don't want to slip on the ice and fall over.
My back. No. It's like a skating ring. As much as yesterday was nice, it's all slushy and frozen overnight, and it's absolutely treacherous out there this morning.
Well, it's because you'll be not going anywhere then.
Well, I was just about to say, like, one day in the last year, I'm glad I'm not commuting to Canary Wharf this morning.
Diamonds are a girl's best friends.
Apparently so, and back in fashion, De Beers has implemented its biggest price increase for diamonds in years. The industry bounces back from the pandemic-induced lockdown. World's biggest diamond producer raised prices by around 5% at its first sale of the year. The increase applies to stones bigger than 1 carat, so probably wouldn't have influenced your purchases. The diamond industry recovery has surprised many after being brought to standstill, of course, in the first half of last year, resulting in retailers' factories being closed down. The good news was that crucial holiday sales in the US and China were strong. Also signs that middlemen have had a shortage of stock, which has also created supply problems and helped to boost prices.
Yeah, and just looking at the data on the new gas and oil exploration, Henk, and really big falls last year, signalling that we are moving towards a more green economy, hopefully.
Well, there's two elements to that. The reality is, of course, that companies dramatically cut back on investment. They cut that capital expenditure given the big falls that we saw in oil prices. They were forced to do so. Many of course, it wasn't the economics weren't in place in order for it to pump oil in a profitable fashion. The second part to that is inevitably this transition to a green agenda, the green economy. And you talk to the oil majors, they're talking about peak oil demand somewhere over the course of the next decade or so, and the idea that they will have to make that aggressive transition. That's where the focus has been coming through from.
And how's Brexit going then?
It's going swimmingly well. We're absolutely fine, thank you.
What?
No problems there whatsoever. We haven't got any food or anything on our shelves in the supermarket, and we can't export anything.
Really?
But other than that, we're in a pretty good shape.
Is Waitrose running low on stuff?
Not Waitrose. I think some of the other ones, Mummy. Some of the other.
Because John Redwood says that we should just sort of grow more of our own, which, you know, if only the British banana and orange industry would wake up, you know.
They've been very lazy about doing that. What did Mrs. Potts tell me? That there's certain things that you cannot buy at the moment. I don't know which. Some vegetables she likes, I don't know.
Vegetables.
She was talking to me about something that you cannot get. Aubergine. That's what it was. Aubergine. Apparently, there's no aubergines in the UK.
Oh, dear. Well, the future is investing in Europe, according to the Department for International Trade.
Well, I think they're suggesting that companies, in order to deal with some of the problems with the initial understanding of the way in which the UK will operate with the European Union, they could set up offices, subsidiaries in Europe to overcome the red tape. Is that right?
Yeah. Is that going to benefit the UK economy to any great extent, do you think, or...?
Add to companies' costs a little bit, has to be said. A little bit of extra confusion, a little bit of,
Well, it might add to their costs a little bit, but on the plus side, it means they won't have to pay sort of exorbitant customs duties.
This is very true. So we're starting to understand exactly what the new rules and regulations mean in practice.
Well, it's much better to be tied up by red, white and blue tape, isn't it, than bureaucratic Brussels red tape.
Or blue and gold tape it should be, I suppose, from Brussels.
Foreign exchanges.
You always try to get me into trouble on this Brexit thing, don't you? Pound against the dollar, 1.37. Euro dollar coming in at 1.21. Going to get 1 euro, 12.5 cents for your British pound this morning.
Have you thought about doing a barbecue in the snow?
Oh, the barbecue can go all year round. I've done barbecues in the snow before. No problems out there. Last night, the snow was glowing white on the mountain. It was beautiful.
Mountain? How many mountains have you got in Cobham?
Box Hill. Beautiful.
Oh, it's not really a mountain now, is it?
Look wonderful.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good day.
Hank Potts and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online, this is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lysa has the top stories across the Riviera.
The head of the Scientific Council, Jean-François Delfracy, has said that further measures must be taken in France against the coronavirus. Delfracy has suggested that France looks at what is happening in neighbouring countries, such as in the UK and Ireland, as he says that in the face of new variants, a new lockdown is likely to be the only solution, adding that a decision now is purely a political one. Delfracy acknowledges that the current figures in France are not alarming, but warns that if France does not tighten restrictions, it will find itself in a difficult situation by mid-March. Delfracy suggests adopting longer school holidays by a week or by grouping them together, and he does not share the optimism of France's health minister, who aims to have the entire population vaccinated by the end of August, saying that the reality is that there is a shortage of vaccines in Europe, and he predicts that only 40% of the population will be vaccinated by the end of the summer, concluding that it will take a long time. The latest figures for COVID in France show that more than 18,000 new cases of COVID were reported on Sunday, with a slight increase of the number of people admitted to intensive care, with 69 new admissions on Sunday, bringing the total to 2,965. 172 new deaths were declared on Sunday. In total, just over 73,000 people have died in France since the beginning of the pandemic. To date, just over a million people in France have received the first shot of the vaccination since the start of the campaign. Meanwhile, here in Monaco, 46 new cases of COVID were identified in the Principality this weekend, bringing the total number of residents affected to 1,357. 57 people are currently hospitalised and 9 people are in intensive care. 146 people are being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. 11 cases of the English variant of COVID have been confirmed in a nursing home in Toulouse. 8 residents and 3 staff members have tested positive. To date in the region, 21 cases of the variant have been identified, including the 11 cases in the nursing home. As announced last week and since Sunday, France has increased its controls at borders for COVID-19. All passengers arriving in France will have to present a negative PCR test carried out 72 hours before their arrival and observe a 7-day quarantine. However, according to France's Interior Ministry, these measures currently concern only air and sea travel and for the time being do not concern train or land travel, but random checks will be carried out. In other news, a hunter has accidentally shot another hunter in the leg. The incident happened on Sunday morning during a wild boar hunt north of Bergerac. The 26-year-old accidentally let off his rifle as he was getting out of his vehicle. The 43-year-old victim suffered serious leg injuries and was taken to hospital in Bordeaux. Following the accident, the president of the Federation of Hunters, Michel Amblard, said that this should not happen, adding that regular training takes place to avoid such incidents. A 15-year-old boy is in a critical condition in hospital after he was severely beaten in a Paris neighbourhood. The incident has triggered a wave of outrage across France and abroad, with sports stars and celebrities expressing their outrage at the attack and support for the victim. Police have launched an investigation into attempted intentional homicide. President Emmanuel Macron has said France will tighten its laws to better protect children against sexual abusers. In a series of tweets, Macron said that France needed to adapt its laws to better protect children from sexual violence. He said he had asked the Justice Minister to launch consultations that would result in legislative proposals. Meanwhile, with 15 months before the presidential election in France, a recent survey has seen that the leader of the National Rally, Marine Le Pen, has gathered between 26 to 27% of the votes, compared to 23 to 24% for the outgoing president. The figures were published in the Harris Interactive Survey, which was commissioned by a Comstrat firm and the daily L'Opinion. Finally, the mayor of the Sable-d'Olonne, Yannick Moreau, has written to French President Emmanuel Macron asking that a small audience be allowed at the arrival of the Vendée Globe, which is scheduled for this week. After their Round the World tour, competitors are expected to arrive on Wednesday in the port, which will be closed to the public due to COVID-19 health restrictions. The mayor asks that while it is obviously not a question to bring in spectators from all over France, allowing a few inhabitants of the port to welcome the skippers could be a possibility.
Riviera Radio Sports News.
Cricket, day four of the second test between Sri Lanka and England in Gaul. England bowled out in the first innings early this morning for 344, with Joe Root top scoring with a magnificent 186. Well, Sri Lanka batting again in their second innings, and the pitch is taking spin. They're 67 for 6 now, leading by 104 runs. It sounds good on paper, but when England comes to bat again, they might find they have quite a few problems. Football, there were 5 fourth round FA Cup ties in England on Sunday. Here are the details from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Alistair Ross at BBC Sport, and a sublime free kick winner from substitute Bruno Fernandes gave Manchester United a 3-2 win over Liverpool in a pulsating FA Cup fourth round tie. Earlier, 2 Liverpool goals from Mo Salah had been matched by United's Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford, but it was Fernandes who settled it, sending the Premier League leaders to a fifth round meeting with West Ham.
I work a lot on this kind of goals, free kicks. I tried. This one was good. Eddie, before the free kick, Cavani told me, try it a hard one on the side of the keeper. I tried and going well.
Chelsea are also through thanks to a Tammy Abraham hat-trick in a 3-1 win over Luton. Leicester had to come from behind to avoid an upset at second-tier Brentford. The match ended 3-1 to Leicester, though, a result that pleased manager Brendan Rodgers.
We're hungry to go as far as we can. You know, I think we showed that today. We made 8 changes, but it was still a high-level performance. So, we can get ready, get a home game now in the next round against Brighton. But pleased to get through today because everyone would have seen it as a really tough game, and to come through it and play that well was pleasing.
Everton beat Sheffield Wednesday by 3-0, and Burnley won away at Fulham by the same scoreline. And Mesut Ozil says he will be a gunner for life after completing his free transfer from Arsenal to Fenerbahce. The former Germany midfielder signed a 3.5-year deal with the Turkish side. In an open letter, he said, "It is difficult for me to put into words the love I feel for the club and the fans. I will be a gunner for life, no doubt about that." And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Oh, well, at least he scored.
Fernandes has done it again.
Yeah. Chelsea.
Oh, come on, it was Luton.
You didn't say
that
earlier.
We were playing Man United.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was Luton.
It's the luck of the draw, though, isn't it?
Jump up and down about it.
Well, any win's a good win at the moment.
Oh, yeah. No, I turned it on. It was 2-2. And I thought, OK, I watched a bit of Dancing on Ice, and then I stuck with Dancing on Ice. I could just see it was
such
going
a dedicated
down.
Fan.
Well, we were in the wrong colour anyway. I kept.
Yeah,
what's going on with that colour? Yeah, I don't know.
Are you supposed to play away in white shirts
it
and
was
red shorts?
Very disturbing. I think that's probably what did
dear
it.
Dear, the final fourth round tie being played tonight. Wycombe Wanderers host Spurs. In the semi final of the Scottish League Cup on Sunday, Livingston beat St Mirren 1-0. And in the English Championship, Preston and Reading drew 0-0, and Blackburn were 1-0 winners at Middlesbrough. Motorsport, Sébastien Ogier has clinched a record 8th victory in the season-opening Monte Carlo Rally. The Frenchman led by 13 seconds heading into the final day, and despite snow and ice affecting the Côte d'Azur hinterland, he came home 32.6 seconds ahead of Toyota teammates Elfyn Evans. Hyundai's Thierry Neuville finished in third. American football, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will face the reigning champions Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 55. The Buccaneers beat the Green Bay Packers 31-26 to reach their first Super Bowl in 18 seasons, while the Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills 38-24. Super Bowl 55 will be played at the Buccaneers' Raymond James Stadium, the first time a team has played the NFL final at their home ground. Only 22,000 fans will be allowed to attend Super Bowl 55 because of COVID-19 restrictions. And in rugby union, there was one game in the Guinness Pro 4 scene on Sunday. Ospreys were 26-20 winners at Comets. Here's the marine weather forecast for coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Almara Sea and the Var. There are gale warnings in force. Now, the general situation is a depression, 999 millibars over the Gulf of Genoa, and a ridge of high pressure, 1,015 millibars over Spain. Winds are westerly, force 7 to gale force 8. The sea is rough, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint Jean Cap Ferrat, 1,001 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, partially cloudy, force 2 to 4 variable winds, slight seas, and good visibility. For North Corsica, gale warnings in force, winds southwesterly, force 6 to gale force 8. The sea is rough, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Course, 1,000 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, partially cloudy, force 2 to 4 variable winds, slight seas and good visibility. That brisk south-northwesterly wind developing again. Top temperature 13 degrees, overnight lows 5 degrees on the coast, 3 degrees inland with clear skies. The weekend partially cloudy, highs of 10 to 12 degrees. Finally,
there's nothing quite like turning in for the night, only to lay there wide awake thanks to your partner's snoring. According to a sleep expert, a tennis ball might be the solution you're looking for.
What, a tennis ball in the gob?
No, all you have to do is sew it into the back of your pyjamas. And while it sounds like absolute madness, there is some logic behind it. The sleep guru explained that snoring often occurs when you sleep on your back, or at least gets worse in this position. So by attaching a tennis ball or something similar to the back of your person's pyjamas, it will be impossible for them to lay flat on their back, therefore preventing snoring. And the expert explained there's been an increase of people who snore regularly during lockdown, possibly due to more time spent at a desk and less time exercising. From there, she suggested the tennis ball hack, which could alleviate the issue altogether.
There's only one problem with that.
What?
What if you don't wear pyjamas?
What if you're in the buff? The balls are in the wrong place, aren't they?
Sarah said that. You're up to date.
He's speechless.
The news is on the website. Never.
Gone bright red.
RivieraRadio.mc.